Chapter 27. The hotel lobby is regarded as international waters because it's the only place where Supes and fans can hang out together after the game. Supes can't be on the Boosters' party floor. Girlfriends can't be on the players' floor. International waters are patrolled by sharks, coaching staff, and vigilant do-gooder chaperones. Coach Alberts announces that his players have exactly 1 hour in international waters. Tomorrow, they'll be allowed a later curfew, but they have ice time early tomorrow for drills. When I sit next to Jamie, he looks around. "Ron is upstairs partying with the diehard Boosters," I say, reaching for his hand. Now that I know Jamie backed off at Ron's direction, what will he do when his supervisor isn't here? My stomach flips with a delicious thrill when he doesn't move his hand from mine. I want things to change back to the night I kissed him and felt his smile. A good change, for once. Jamie remains motionless while everyone laughs over Levi's imitation of Mike blocking goals. My brother looks like he's playing a solo game of Twister. Moving on to Stormy, Levi puts up his fists. "Let's go then, let's go then," he repeats it until the words blur into Skoden. My brother high-fives his best friend and dubs him Skoden Noden, the baddest goon Sugar Island's ever seen. That's not true. Dad was the ultimate goon. Sometimes I worry that Levi forgets things about Dad. Whenever I mention the scarf that we'd hold on to as Dad pulled us around the ice, jade green, soft, and extra long, my brother swears it was sky blue. He also swears that it's in their house somewhere, but he hasn't been able to find it. Levi moves in front of me and Jamie. My brother flashes his perfect smile before gliding from side to side, mimicking Jamie's finesse. He adds his best version of Patrick Swayze from Dirty Dancing. Jamie gives an embarrassed smile that doesn't reach his eyes or pull at his scar. "Loverboy got some smooth moves," Levi says. Leaning over, I kiss Jamie's cheek. His jaw clenches. I break away at the realization that, even when done for show, my kiss wasn't welcomed. The sting of rejection intensifies as I comprehend the mannequin-like stiffness of his hand in mine. "Stop it, Donis," I begin my internal pep talk. "Don't let Jamie cloud your focus. The investigation is about protecting your community, getting answers." When my brother continues his imitation game on the other players, I motion for Jamie to follow me. I lead him to the farthest corner of international waters. "Listen," I start. "I don't care what Ron says about emotional connections or whatever. I won't kiss you if you're not comfortable. But we should still hold hands in front of other people. For the investigation. Us posing as a couple is the best way for you to be accepted in town." More irony. The same people who might not accept me will embrace the new guy in town because he's a soup who fake dates me. Jamie doesn't say anything. He looks down at our shoes. His black dress boots are so different from the rugged ones I'm used to. These are polished leather, stylish, urbane. "You need to trust me. I can handle this," I nudge him. "I'm here to help." "I know you are," he says, meeting my eyes. His Adam's apple bobs as he gulps. "What happens when someone finds out which tribe they're from?" "What does this have to do with the investigation?" "There are over 500 federally recognized tribes, Jamie. Each one is different." I take in his pleading expression. "Is it possible there are other reasons why he's working undercover in a tribal community?" "I can only talk about Sugar Island. First off, is the person an adult or child?"
"Adult. Does that matter?"
"It's less complicated to enroll a child who's eligible. If their parent is enrolled and listed on the birth certificate, it's an easy process as long as the kid meets the blood quantum minimum. It's different for adults. Once the tribe built the casino, there was a push to close enrollment for adults. So people have until their 19th birthday to enroll. But with PerCap, it's rare for someone to wait that long." I search his face for a clue as to why he's brought this up. I thought his pensiveness was due to Ron's warning, but maybe there's something else on his mind.
"So, if you don't enroll before you're an adult, You miss out? Jamie asks. I think about Ryan and me, both trying to make the deadline. Not necessarily. Sugar Island makes exceptions for people who got adopted out, and his eyes widen at the word.
Adopted.
That's what happened to you, isn't it? I've been speaking quietly this whole time, but now my voice is a whisper. Jamie doesn't answer. He looks away again. Families search for babies who were adopted out before ICWA. I pronounce the Indian Child Welfare Act by how its acronym sounds, ICWA. You know, the federal law to prevent the removal of Native children from their homes and tribal communities. Some people set an extra place for them at feasts. I've seen those plates, but I never really thought about how it might feel to be the person it was intended for. Hey, I reach for the sleeve of his maroon dress shirt before pulling my hand back in case he isn't comfortable with my touching him anymore. We have ceremonies when someone comes home, after tribal council votes on their enrollment. I step as close as I can without actual physical contact. Those ceremonies are powerful, healing. Other tribes might do that too. Your tribe might do that. We don't forget our lost ones. He blinks quickly and clears his throat. When he opens his mouth, I can't hear his voice, but I feel it like a warm blanket on a cold night. Miigwech. Coach Alberts gives a 5-minute warning for curfew. We walk past couples kissing as if about to be separated by catastrophe. We squeeze into the crowded elevator. Jamie's hand grasps mine. It isn't for show because nobody can see. Just before it stops at my floor, Jamie's thumb caresses my hand, gliding smoothly back and forth across my fingers. Casual yet tender stroking that makes me catch my breath. I distract myself by reciting the muscles he's touching. First dorsal interosseous, second dorsal interosseous. At the ding of the elevator, my eyes meet Jamie's. While angler fishes detach from their boyfriends, Jamie leans in, pausing when his lips are an inch from mine.
Okay, he whispers.
Yes, I reply. His lips are soft, like a down feather, perfect and gentle. No one comments about it. After all, why would they? One kiss out of many happening in the elevator. They don't know it was our first kiss on the lips. The post-game party is going strong as I step out of the elevator. People ricochet from room to room. Every door is propped open. Music blasts down the hallway, Big and Rich instructing us to save a horse, ride a cowboy. I bump into Ron. His goofy smile tells me it's not his first can of beer.
Jamie doing okay? He asks.
Yep, I say, passing him. I'm turning in for the night. Keep it down out here.
Yes, boss, he calls from behind.
I glance back and chuckle as Ron heads into another room for more reconnaissance. At the end of the hallway, the door next to mine opens and the bus flasher exits. She's married to an old guy whose family bought land on Sugar Island from Nishnabs who fell on hard times. Their house is at the southern tip of the island. Right now, her hair looks like a family of squirrels has claimed it for their winter nest. Call me Grant, towel wrapped low around his hips, stands in the doorway, watching her leave for just an instant before turning his gaze to me. His expression is so unabashedly proud. I wonder if he will strut down the hallway to receive high fives from everyone. No one bats an eye. In Booster World, there are different rules, or rather a suspension of rules. Or maybe guys like him know the rules don't apply to them. I brush past him, trying not to look at his naked torso. There's a scientific name for his six-pack, but it escapes me.
Hello, Donis Fontaine.
His voice reverberates low, like a high-performance engine toying with first gear. I enter the key card the wrong way, and a light flashes red. I turn it around and get another red light. He chuckles and pulls the latch on his own door so it won't lock him out. His bare feet bring him to my door in 3 quick steps.
You're jiggling it.
He takes the card without asking and smoothly pushes it into the slot. The light blinks green.
The right moves make all the difference, Donis Fontaine.
Thank you, I say, sounding like Grand Mary in her prim and formal tone.
He laughs, happy to help any time. I close the door before he offers any suggestions. It's week 2 of a 6-month season. 22 or so more weeks of avoiding Call Me Grant.
The next day, Coach Bobby gets huffy when I reach for one of the boxes of hockey pucks he has stacked to carry into the arena.
You shouldn't be lifting with that shoulder of yours, Coach says.
I'm all healed up, Coach.
I can tell he wants to protest, but his hands are full, so he can't stop me from taking the top box and following him. When I reach the visitors section of the bleachers, I set the box of pucks next to the other one. I decided to be even more helpful and use my keys to open the clear packing tape across the top. The girlfriends will walk up and down the steps in our section holding out these souvenir pucks to the fans. I decide to join them tonight, since it won't involve going onto the ice. The box I open has plain hockey pucks.
Coach Bobby, are these the right pucks? They don't have the Supes logo.
That's because those are donated. He rushes over to show that some have a Dreamcatcher design printed on them. Coach looks around, tilts his head toward where Call Me Grant sits next to the bus flasher.
Grant Edwards is donating these to a tribal youth program, Coach says.
Don't mention anything, though, because he likes to keep that stuff quiet.
Wait, so the local Nish kids get defective pucks?
I'm instantly pissed, because half the Dreamcatchers look smeared.
Fontaine, we're all just trying to do our best out here, he says.
When it's time to take a seat, I glance at the empty spot between Ron and Call Me Grant before squeezing next to maybe Megan.
Hey, everyone, it's Donis!
One quick side hug later, maybe Megan hands me a large gift bag.
This is from all of us. We meant to give it to you yesterday, but someone misplaced it.
She glares down the row at a fellow anglerfish. Reaching into the bag, I feel the stiff fabric of a new hockey jersey. I hold up an extra-long Navy Supes jersey with the white and silver wave logo on the front.
We were going to put Jamie's last name on it, but some wondered if you'd want Levi's on it too, one of the girlfriends says. And Megan said you were former teammates with Mike and Stormy, and you're kind of like the team's ambassador, but all those last names would be a lot.
So we figured your own name was just fine, Megan declares. I turn the jersey to reveal Donis on the back in silver-edged white letters.
It's perfect, I manage to say before my throat constricts from rising emotions. Shock and awe at their generosity, humility and gratitude for the thoughtful consideration they gave me when I hadn't done the same for them. Most of all, I'm overcome with joy.
During the first intermission, I proudly wear my new team jersey to hand out a stack of pucks with the Supes logo through the visitors section. I recognize most of our fans. The lady who took over the War Memorial Hospital auxiliary after Grand Mary's stroke rubs my arm.
I'm praying for your grandmother, she says.
My BlackBerry vibrates in my back pocket. I ignore it to continue tossing pucks. When I hold one out to a girl who graduated a year before me, she reads something on her cell phone that causes her to burst into tears. Another vibration. My heart races. Someone else looks at their phone. People share shocked expressions, and I see one girl cover her mouth with her hand. Dropping the pucks, I reach for my phone to read whatever bad news is rippling through the bleachers.
Auntie. Robin is dead. TJ said meth OD.